Palestinian Authority and Israeli officials hold talks in Jordan in an alleged bid to de-escalate tensions in the occupied territories. A number of Arab Parliament speakers and lawmakers visit Damascus as Arab states try to restore ties with Syria. The Russian president again hits out of the West for its weapons supply to Ukraine, saying that Moscow should take into account the nuclear capabilities of NATO. Top story this hour, Palestinian Authority and Israeli officials holding talks in Jordan in the midst of heightened tensions in the occupied territories. The talks in the Red Sea port of Aqaba also included officials from the United States and Egypt. At the end of the meeting, Israel and Palestinian Authority officials stressed the need for de-escalation. They also agreed to meet again in Egypt next month. Resistance groups, including Hamas, had already called on the Palestinian Authority to withdraw from that meeting. That's because they regarded it as a U.S. plot against Palestinian aspirations. Meanwhile, university students in the besieged Gaza Strip rallied against the Aqaba meeting and in support of Palestinians in the occupied West Bank. Israel has intensified crackdown against Palestinians recently. The violence has killed more than 60 Palestinians so far this year. Palestinians in the blockaded Gaza Strip have denounced the meeting between senior officials from the Palestinian Authority and the Israeli regime in Jordan. U.S. and Egyptian representatives were also present at that meeting. Ashraf Shannon has a report from Gaza.
Palestinians in Gaza, including resistance factions, non-governmental organizations, academics, as well as civil society groups, held a national conference on Sunday to condemn the Aqaba summit. The meeting between Israeli and the Palestinian Authority officials was held in the Jordanian Red Sea resort of Aqaba. It was also attended by representatives from the United States and Egypt. The spokesman for Hamas resistance movement said that the Aqaba summit aims to cover up the Israeli regime's ongoing crimes against the Palestinian people.
The Aqaba security summit will only harm the Palestinian cause and aims to abort the simmering uprising in the West Bank and Al-Quds. The participation of the Palestinian Authority in this summit only indicates the resumption of security cooperation with the occupying regime. We call on all countries to hold an international conference to support the rights of the Palestinian people.
The summit comes only days after Israeli regime forces killed around a dozen Palestinians and wounded some 90 others in the occupied West Bank city of Nablus. In its final communique, the conference in Gaza stressed the importance of increasing all forms of resistance against the Israeli occupation and protecting occupied Al-Quds and Al-Aqsa Mosque against all Israeli plots.
All forms of resistance against the Israeli occupation all over Palestine are legitimate and will continue to increase despite all conspiracies and challenges. We also warn the Israeli regime against playing with fire and violating the sanctity of Al-Quds and Al-Aqsa Mosque.
Palestinians maintain that the Aqaba summit aims to sow seeds of division among Palestinians and to suppress resistance groups in the occupied West Bank.
The Aqaba meeting, which is going to be held today with the sponsorship of the Americans, Egypt, Jordan, and that will include Israel and the Palestinian Authority, is intended, in my opinion, to resume security coordination between the Palestinian Authority and Israel. And also, I think it's intended to crack down on Palestinian resistance.
Many Palestinians believe that the Palestinian Authority has become a haven for small Palestinian factions that have long abandoned the path of resistance against the Israeli occupation. Since the start of this year, over 60 Palestinians, including 13 children, have been killed by Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank. Analysts say the Aqaba summit will only give Tel Aviv the green light to kill and maim more Palestinians. Ashraf Shannon, Gaza.
The Israeli Knesset recently passed a bill to stop the funding of medical treatment for Palestinian detainees. Palestinians, including prisoners' families, say that those measures are part of the regime's perpetual war against the inmates and aimed at slowly killing them. Mona Kendall reports from the occupied West Bank.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails have always suffered from deprivation of basic human rights, torture and medical negligence, which has been on the rise lately. The families of sick Palestinian prisoners are seriously worried about the health of their loved ones after the Israeli Knesset passed a bill in the first reading to stop the funding of medical treatment for Palestinian inmates. We visited the family of 48-year-old prisoner Abdel Basit Matan, who is diagnosed with cancer. His wife says this new bill will add to the hardship of the ailing prisoners already suffering from medical negligence.
The new law by the Knesset will heighten our concerns as prisoners' families about the health of the sick prisoners, mainly those suffering from cancer. They are literally legalizing the crime of the inmate's slow and deliberate killing. The prison's administration has always adopted the policy of medical negligence, and now it's legalizing this policy. The health situation of my husband and other prisoners diagnosed with cancer does not allow for any negligence or postponement of medical treatment. They need checkups and frequent examinations.
The Palestinian prisoners agree that confrontation is their only option in response to the prison services' measures against them and the continued attacks by the extreme right-wing Israeli regime. Last week, the prisoners declared a disobedience campaign in response to policies adopted by far-right Israeli Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir that include solitary confinement, raids and search of rooms, confiscation of prisoners' belongings, and bans on family visits, as well as the closure of bakeries inside the prisons and limiting shower time for each inmate to 4 minutes.
The situation inside Israeli jails is really difficult, complicated, and hard on the prisoners. This is firstly because of the calls by the extremist right-wing ministers to take revenge on the prisoners and impose new conditions. The prisoners have started a disobedience campaign and will escalate their actions in the coming days and will not remain silent. They might declare an open-ended hunger strike as a direct countermeasure against the steps by the extremist minister Itamar Ben-Gvir.
There are now about 4,700 Palestinians held in Israeli prisons, including 150 children and 34 women. In addition to hundreds of prisoners with various illness, there are nearly 200 detainees who suffer from chronic diseases and 24 who are diagnosed with cancer. In addition to their disobedience movement to protest the illegal practices by Israel's prisons administration, Palestinian inmates are also planning to escalate their protests by starting fresh hunger strike action on the first day of the holy month of Ramadan. The prisoners insist that the campaign can only end with freedom or martyrdom. Mona Kandil, Occupy Ramallah.
Now, heads of a number of Arab parliaments have paid an official visit to the Syrian capital, and that following a devastating quake that hit the country in early February, and amid increasing steps taken by a number of Arab states toward mending relations with Syria. Mohammed Ali has more in his report.
An official delegation from the Arab Interparliamentary Union has met with Syrian President Bashar al-Assad in Damascus. Assad said the visit shows there are Arab institutions still capable of taking action for the interest of Arab people. He also thanked those countries for their rapid response in assisting Syrians following the earthquake. The head of the union expressed solidarity with the Syrian people, underlining the importance of taking necessary action to ensure Syria's return to playing an active role in the Arab world. The delegation, which includes heads of parliaments of the UAE, Egypt, Libya, Jordan, and Palestine, then headed to the Syrian parliament, where they met with its speaker, Hamoud Sabbagh.
We represent Arab people. This is a historic visit. We wanted to convey a message of support to the brotherly Syrian people. We had a high-level meeting with President Assad, who is a highly educated person. We had a rich dialogue with him. We were glad to meet him. In brief, we came to say that the people we represent support Syria.
Members of the delegation called for the restoration of relations between Syria and the Arab world, promising to exert all efforts for that purpose. They expressed readiness to offer all the help needed to alleviate the people's suffering after the devastating earthquake that hit the country, while calling for all sanctions crippling Syria's economy to be lifted.
Going on, the death toll from a migrant shipwreck near the coast of southern Italy has risen to nearly 60, several children also among the victims. The Coast Guard says around 80 migrants have survived the tragic incident. The vessel crashed against rocks during rough sea weather. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen says that she is deeply saddened by the tragedy and called for progress and a stalled reform of EU asylum rules. Italy is one of the main landing points for migrants trying to enter Europe by sea. More than 20,000 people have reportedly died or gone missing in the central Mediterranean since 2014. Our Rome correspondent Max Chivoli joined us a while ago and he said that human rights organizations hold Prime Minister Meloni responsible for the migrants' deaths.
Humanitarian organizations are saying that Prime Minister Meloni should be held accountable for the deaths of tens of migrants following a provision she introduced in November last year. It's a compulsory code of conduct for NGO-run ships rescuing asylum seekers in the Mediterranean Sea that Meloni herself introduced in November last year. The new measures basically force all NGO-run ships to deliver rescued asylum seekers to port immediately without waiting to pick up more people at sea or transferring asylum seekers to larger vessels. Earlier this month, an Italian court, the Court of Catania, ruled the government's anti-migrant measure as unlawful. But also the Council of Europe has urged Italy to scrap that decree, describing it as a breach of international law because the councillors have the idea that the measure prevents search and rescue missions.
The Russian president says that the West is an indirect accomplice to the crimes committed by Ukraine in the war with Russia. Vladimir Putin says that NATO is indirectly involved in the conflict by sending tens of billions of dollars in weapons to Ukraine. He also stressed that Moscow has no choice but to take into account the nuclear capabilities of NATO, and that's because the U.S. Military alliance is trying to defeat the Russian Federation. Putin said that he had no doubt that a multipolar world would happen. He made those comments in an interview with a Russian TV channel. Thousands of Sri Lankans have streamed into the streets of the capital Colombo in protest of the government's decision to postpone local elections. Police responded with tear gas and water cannon. The protesters were trying to march on the main business district when they were dispersed by the police. Some 15 people were treated for minor injuries. The government says it cannot finance the March 9th elections because of the country's crippling economic crisis. Sri Lanka was also the scene of massive rallies last July when scores of people stormed the presidential office and residence, occupying them for days. The crisis forced the then-president Gotabaya Rajapaksa to flee and resign. The turmoil was triggered by severe shortages of food, fuel, cooking gas, and medicine after Sri Lanka went bankrupt because it could not repay its foreign debt. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guard Corps has unveiled a new cruise missile that's capable of hitting targets with a range of more than 1,600 kilometers. The new accomplishment adds to the already long list of precision-guided missiles and other weaponry manufactured by Iranian armed forces in the face of foreign threats.
Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps has announced the operation of a new cruise missile with a range of over 1,600 kilometers. Speaking at a televised program, commander of the IRGC Aerospace Division, Brigadier General Amirali Hajizadeh, said the new long-range missile is codenamed PAVE. The commander said this was to honor the Iranian forces martyred in the Kurdistan province. The Brigadier General noted that all of Iran's missiles are now manufactured with precision-guided accuracy, adding that all American bases in the region are within the reach of the Iranian missiles. Hajizadeh said, "We are now capable of targeting American aircraft carriers at a 2,000-kilometer distance." He noted that the U.S.'s superiority has been shaking after Iran developed its new hypersonic missile, which can maneuver outside the Earth's atmosphere and defeat all anti-missile defense systems. In a stern warning also to Europe, the Iranian commander said, "Of course, we have kept the distance at 2,000 kilometers out of respect for the Europeans," adding, "We hope that Europeans would preserve their dignity." The remarks by the Iranian commander came at a time when Europe has done its share of trying to antagonize Iran by closely aligning its Tehran policies with those of the U.S. After all, the European countries, namely France, Germany, and the U.K., have been maintaining a hostile posture toward Iran's defensive missile and peaceful nuclear programs. The EU has also challenged Tehran's regional influence and cooperated with Washington in its anti-Iran sanctions. Needless to say that last month, the European Parliament approved an amendment calling on the European Union and its member states to include the IRGC on their terror list. The resolution drew strong reaction from Iran. IRGC's chief commander, Major General Hossein Salami, warned that the Europeans would suffer the consequences of the move. The 27-nation bloc has also been slapping more sanctions on Iran over what it calls the country's approach toward foreign-backed riots that erupted in some Iranian cities in September.
The West Asia region has been the scene of catastrophic wars and conflict in the past 40 years, waged by the U.S. and its allies, including Israel. And this highlights the need for countries in this region to stand firm in the face of foreign threats. And one way to do that is to come up with new sophisticated military hardware, and something which is highlighted in Iran's military doctrine.
The recent IRGC announcement comes as the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has called on the country's military to increase its efforts to attract, nurture, and train capable Iranians in line with the Islamic Revolution military doctrine. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei has called on the IRGC to use its full capabilities to be able to protect the revolution and to strengthen the IRGC's spiritual and military foundations. This can be clearly highlighted in General Hajizadeh's comments when he addressed the issue of Iran's growing missile power. He has enumerated features of the country's hypersonic missile that was manufactured late last year and announced a new cruise missile's inclusion in the list of IRGC's military hardware. This brings to the spotlight the military might of the Islamic Republic, which includes capabilities of Iran's army with its latest underground base for fighter jets, and more particularly the country's missile power in the face of the West's threats. That comprises threats coming from Israel, with the regime targeting several military sites in the city of Isfahan lately. While U.S.'s benefit lies in creating regional insecurity, as General Hajizadeh put it, there needs to be a military power in the region to deter such threats. Tehran believes that Washington is a root cause of almost all global conflicts, including the war in Ukraine. The Islamic Republic argues that the West Asia region sits on a security fault line, given the history of conflicts in the past four decades. Another factor that Tehran has always highlighted is the need to maintain the country's military might. It says if it fails to be strong, the enemy will bring the war inside Iran. That's why Iranian military commanders urge and advise Iranian armed forces to meet the security needs of the nation. Given all the threats posed by the U.S. and its allies, the Corps has always been aiming to render the American war machine ineffective, and thus has managed to bring all the U.S.'s regional bases within the range of its defensive firepower. They have also turned Washington bases in the region into its weak spots, with the IRGC having the ability to strike U.S. outposts whenever the need arises.
And with that, we come to the end of this broadcast from Tehran. Goodbye.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The United Nations Security Council, UNSC, has expressed deep concern and dismay over the Zionist regime's settlement activity in a watered-down statement replacing a draft resolution that would have explicitly condemned the Zionist regime's policies. The council said the Security Council reiterates that continuing Israeli settlement activities are dangerously imperiling the viability of the two-state solution based on 1967 lines. The symbolic measure came in response to a decision by the Zionist regime earlier this month to authorize thousands of settlement units in the occupied West Bank and retroactively legalize unlawfully built settlement outposts. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Palestinian Wafa News Agency noted the United Nations Security Council unanimously denounced the Zionist regime's plans to expand its settlements in the occupied West Bank, stressing that the settlement activities harm the viability of the two-state solution. A statement read at the conclusion of a special meeting expressed the Council's deep concern and dismay with the Zionist regime's announcement on February 12, 2023, announcing further construction and expansion of settlements and the legitimization of settlement outposts. It added, "The Security Council reiterates that continuing Israeli settlement activities are dangerously imperiling the viability of the two-state solution based on the 1967 lines." Wafa added, read by Vanessa Fraser, Malta's UN envoy who is serving as the Council's president for the month of February, the statement said, "The Security Council strongly underscores the need for all parties to meet their international obligations and commitments, strongly opposes all unilateral measures that impede peace, including Israeli construction and expansion of settlements, confiscation of Palestinian lands and the legitimate legalization of settlement outposts, demolition of Palestinian homes, and displacement of Palestinian civilians." The statement further condemned all acts of violence against civilians, including those that have targeted Palestinians, and called on all parties to observe calm and restraint and to refrain from proactive actions, incitement and inflammatory rhetoric with the aim, inter alia, of escalating the situation on the ground. Also, RT had an eye on this issue, writing, "The United Nations Security Council, UNSC, has issued a statement denouncing Israeli settlements in the occupied West Bank, deeming them a major obstacle to peace in the region. While a separate resolution would have called for an immediate end to all settlement activity, it was successfully thwarted by American negotiators, according to multiple outlets. The Security Council expressed deep concern and dismay over the further expansion of settlement outposts, citing recently announced plans by the Israeli regime to legally authorize 9 existing settlements in the West Bank. The UNSC strongly opposes all unilateral measures that impede peace, including the construction and expansion of settlements, confiscation of Palestinian land, and the legalization of settlement outposts, demolition of Palestinian homes, and displacement of Palestinian civilians," it said, adding that the ongoing settlement activity is dangerously imperiling the viability of the two-state solution. We'll be right back. RT continued, while the Israeli regime's troops withdrew from Gaza in 2005, the military continues to occupy the West Bank, often providing security for Israeli settlers, building homes and communities on Palestinian land. A long line of humanitarian organizations, as well as the UN itself, have repeatedly denounced the settlements as violations of international law, namely Article 49 of the Geneva Conventions, which states that occupying powers must not deport or transfer parts of its own civilian population into the territory it occupies. However, with hundreds of thousands of Israelis now living in the West Bank, the Zionist regime has insisted on the right to remain in the area, creating major complications for any future two-state solution. The U.S. regime has consistently supported the fabricated regime of Israel amid criticism of the settlements and other policies toward the Palestinians, frequently using its veto power at the UN to shut down resolutions seeking to condemn or curtail the Zionist regime's actions. Washington has similarly opposed efforts to seek accountability at other global bodies, such as the International Criminal Court, ICC. According to the Associated Press, the recent UN's statement was deliberately watered down following a pressure campaign by certain diplomats who reportedly led high-stakes negotiations to kill a legally binding Security Council resolution which would have required immediate action on the settlements. After heavily promoting the resolution, the Palestinian Authority ultimately agreed to suspend its efforts thanks to pressure and mediation, Axios reported.
Food for thought.
Salam, friends, and felicitations on the birth anniversary of the survivor of the tragedy of Karbala, Imam Zainul Abidin, peace upon him, the fourth infallible successor of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Here is something to ponder upon from him. Fear God and know that you will inevitably return to Him when everyone will see His good and bad deeds right before His very eyes. He will wish for the longest period of time to separate Himself from His bad deeds.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz, and in southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, moderation in speech. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of the moderation in speech in the Islamic lifestyle. When we look at the Islamic teachings, it is said that we should not talk too much and we must have a moderate way. Even in some narrations, it has been narrated that a less speech is the sign of an intellectual. And the intellects do not talk too much when they are sitting in among the people or between the people, in people. Therefore, it is necessary that when we want to speak, we think before it. And speaking and having this moderate way in speaking will lead us to have a good personality. It makes a good personality out of a person. If a person speaks less and he is not exaggerating in speaking, or maybe he does not speak so loudly so that everyone gets annoyed of him or her, then obviously this person is known as a moderate person. And it is necessary that when we talk, even in the speech, we have this moderate way. Now we can take this thing in two ways. Either the speech, what we are saying, should be something which is moderate, which do not hurt the people, which conveys our message. On the other hand, when someone is speaking, he speaks a lot maybe, or he speaks too loud. So in both ways, this thing can be discussed. And in both ways, Islamic teachings tells us to have control on ourselves and not to exaggerate while speaking or delivering the speech. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of moderation in speech in the Islamic lifestyle. We said that it can be taken in two ways. Either the speech that has been delivered should be in a moderate way so that the people who are the listeners who are in front of us, they know that we are not exaggerating, we are not exceeding our limits, and we are within the limits, and we do not hurt the others through our speeches. And therefore, Islam has said that according to the narration of Amir al-Mu'minin, al-aqilu man aqala lisanahu, the intellectual is the one who controls his tongue. He thinks before the speaking, he controls his tongue. He does not say anything. You know, we have some people who keeps talking, and when you say something, they answer quickly, and they do not think about the consequences of that. Therefore, it is necessary to control this tongue. And on the other hand, when talking about someone who speaks so loudly, in the Quran, it is said about the Luqman, who was a wise person, Luqman al-Hakim. He has advised his son, and the verse says that he said to his son that وَغْضُضْ مِنْ صَوْتِكَ إِنَّنْ كَرَ الْأَصْوَاتِ لَصَوْتُ الْحَمِيرِ, that you need to lower down your tone of speaking. You need to have a moderate way of speaking. Why? Because it is the donkeys who speak loudly, who make noise loudly. So basically, those we need to avoid to speak so loudly so that everyone around us becomes disturbed. So therefore, it is necessary to not to disturb the others and to control ourselves while talking about the speech as well, or the tone or the way of speaking. It should be controlled, and we must have the moderate way, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Iran's technological future.
Part 2.
After the atomic bombing in the World War, the Radium Girls, and similar incidents like the Chernobyl disaster in Ukraine in 1986 and the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear disaster in 2011 after the 8.9 strong earthquake, the international community rose up against nuclear energy. But the question is, why do countries, even Japan that was subject to the biggest atomic curse, not give up nuclear energy? Why does a country like Iran make so much effort and spend so much money to achieve such an apparently dangerous energy? West Asia is known for its wars. The wars were initially waged under different excuses, but they usually pursue the same goal, and that is oil. The United States' latest direct war in the region was launched in 2003. The U.S. invaded Iraq under the pretext that the country possessed weapons of mass destruction, like biological and nuclear bombs. But after years of war and bloodshed, no weapons that were used as a pretext to invade the country were found. Even though no unconventional weapons were found in the country, it was rich in oil resources that was hugely extracted. After the invasion, oil was extracted and used to push U.S. policies and economy forward. The U.S. dealt with Iraq and raised accusations that are somehow similar to Israel's behavior vis-a-vis Iran.
This is a fuse. That Iran has another secret facility in Tehran, a secret atomic warehouse for storing massive amounts of equipment and material from Iran's secret nuclear weapons program. We exposed the site of Iran's secret atomic archive. It's right here. in the Shorabad district of Tehran. Today, I'm revealing the site of a second facility, Iran's secret atomic warehouse. It's right here in the Turkuzabad district of Tehran, just 3 miles away.
The Turkuzabad carpet washing center was Netanyahu's last trick for the media to get the international community on board his Iranophobia scheme for, quote, possessing nuclear weapons. But the Israeli regime did not stop there at the media campaign level. To date, it has assassinated top Iranian nuclear scientists. He's someone who doesn't want to realize that based on numerous inspections by the International Atomic Energy Agency, IAEA, and the religious views of the Iranian leader, it is not after nuclear weapons.
As of today, I can state that Iran is implementing its nuclear-related commitments. We have had access to all the sites and locations which we needed to visit.
So why does Israel keep insisting on the accusation and pursue such confrontational policies with Iran to stop the country from reaching nuclear technology? Is it possible that the objections are just excuses? Just like what happened in Iraq? How can the energy benefit Iran that the Israeli regime does everything it can to stop it from reaching the technology? It was exactly 6 years after the first and last nuclear bomb blast that a national lab in Idaho was lit up by only 4 200-watt light bulbs. Even though the EBR-1 project's goal was not to generate electricity, it corroborated theories concerning producing electricity from nuclear energy. The system, which was more complicated than making an atomic bomb, was later named nuclear reactor. The reactors could easily provide electricity for a city or more without constructing huge dams or consuming thousands of tons of charcoal and emitting pollutant gases. 70 years after the 4 famous light bulbs in Idaho were lit up, a little further away, Bill Gates, as the richest man on the planet and the owner of Microsoft, was investing on nuclear reactors that could work for 60 years after fueling just once. Today, reactors have considerably reduced consumption of oil condensates for producing energy. For example, the 1,000-megawatt reactor in Iran's Bushehr has saved 47 million barrels of oil that would otherwise be used for generating electricity in 7 years. In Europe, generating electricity is the foremost goal of using nuclear energy for peaceful purposes, but in Asia, there is a more burning issue, and that is water. West Asia is among the driest regions in the continent. It has only 1% of fresh water resources in the world. Many analysts believe that the next wars in the region will not be over oil. They say water is a serious concern in this part of the world. In this dry region, Israel has managed to export its agricultural products to all across the world, besides meeting 95% of its population's demands. The Israeli regime does not have underground water resources or many rivers. However, it has tipped environmental balance in its own favor by using nuclear technology to rein in nature. On the shores of the Red Sea, the saline water is desalinated for agriculture and drinking. As an example, Sorek, as the largest water treatment plant in the world, located 15 kilometers south of Tel Aviv, can purify 230 million cubic meters of water and tackle water shortage to a great extent.
This amount of water is equal to the water Iran annually receives from the Karajan Latian dams for drinking and agriculture in Tehran and Elbourz provinces, with a population of about 15 million people. Even though only 20% of the land occupied by the Israeli regime is arable, today it has become an agricultural hub.
This is the finished product, desalinated water. And according to the officials here at the plant, it's a more complete water than water that hasn't had the saline removed, because in the process of desalination, minerals are added back.
It seems the Israeli regime and Washington are seeking to stop Iran from accessing nuclear energy, not because they are worried it might make a nuclear bomb, but they are concerned that Iran might achieve the nuclear technology that can strengthen its independence and tackle millions of Iranians' needs. Water and energy are among the most vital necessities in agriculture and other industries, and even if a country like Iran does not need nuclear energy to fulfill its needs, it still cannot forego the energy. If the fruit produced by farmers goes bad before reaching the market, it will bring nothing but financial loss and physical exhaustion. Many kinds of fruit cannot resist against natural bacteria and fungus as they quickly go bad. Today, the key to reach the market, especially the international one, is in the hand of irradiation. Thanks to nuclear technology, radiation technology has been around for 60 years and is used in the agriculture industry. Exposing fruits to the light emission of radiation for a short time can destroy the larvae and bacteria in fruits and increase its shelf life. Today, many agricultural products and even fruits like strawberry that have very short shelf life are exported to other countries. Exposing fruits to the gamma ray at entry points and quarantine centers of a country can stop the spread of insects and pests.
We have to look at the taste, the color, the granulometry. Is there some foreign material? And also we look at the microbiology. Spices can be contaminated up to 1 million bacteria per gram. And with the irradiation, it can reduce by 99.9%. Other treatment will not offer that kind of reduction. Irradiation for us will not change the taste, the color, will not leave any residue, and also is really lowering the microbiological count.
When we piece together different problems like medical treatment, industrial experiments, and other issues a country can resolve by using the nuclear technology, we find out that there is a good reason behind Iran's political and economic battle to achieve the technology. Today, if a country wants to guarantee its economic, scientific, and technological future, it needs to step in this field.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Maro
هدایت میکنه.
It guides us through life.
همه چیز رو تعلیم داده.
It has taught us everything.
باید آموخت. باید فهمید.
We should learn and appreciate what it gives us.
و اونگاه پیاده کردن این مفاهیم در واقعیت زندگی.
And try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible?
از راه قرآن.
By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من، این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازمی است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
کتاب الله.
In the limelight.
U.S. prison deaths increased by 50% in the first year of the COVID pandemic. In six U.S. states, the rate of deaths in prisons doubled between 2019 and 2020. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. New York Times wrote in this regard, as the pandemic swept America, deaths in prisons rose nearly 50%. The first comprehensive data on prison fatalities in the COVID era sheds new light on where and why prisoners were especially vulnerable. Deaths in state and federal prisons across America rose nearly 50% during the first year of the pandemic, and in six states, they more than doubled, according to the first comprehensive data on prison fatalities in the era of COVID-19. The tremendous jump in deaths in 2020 was more than twice the increase in the United States overall, and even exceeded estimates of the percentage increase at nursing homes, among the hardest hit sectors nationwide. In many states, the data showed high rates continued in 2021. While there was ample evidence that prisons were COVID hotspots, an examination of the data by New York Times underscored how quickly the virus rampaged through crowded facilities and how an aging inmate population, a correctional staffing shortage, and ill-equipped medical personnel combined to make prisoners especially vulnerable during the worst public health crisis in a century. There are so many people who passed away due to not getting the medical care they needed, said Teresa Bibo, whose imprisoned friend died from complications of COVID and cancer in South Carolina, adding, most of these people, they didn't go in there with death sentences, but they are dying. According to New York Times, COVID infections drove the death totals, but inmates also succumbed to other illnesses, suicide and violence, according to the data, which was collected by law school researchers at the University of California, Los Angeles, and provided a more detailed, accurate look at deaths in prison systems during the pandemic than earlier efforts. Altogether, at least 6,182 people died in American prisons in 2020, compared with 4,240 the previous year. Even as the country's prison population declined to about 1.3 million from more than 1.4 million, several of the U.S. states with the highest mortality rates in 2020 had a history of elevated prison deaths, including Alabama, Arkansas, South Carolina, and West Virginia. Researchers said the high numbers, 96 deaths per 10,000 prisoners in West Virginia, more than in any other state, stemmed from long sentences, harsh conditions, and relatively poor public health overall. Clearly, the pandemic is the story, but it is just a part of the story, said Aaron Littman, an assistant professor and the acting director of the UCLA Law Behind Bars Data Project. Even some states with typically lower death rates saw a surge. Michigan and Nevada both had about 70 fatalities per 10,000 inmates in 2020, up from about 30 the previous year. In New York, an early epicenter of the pandemic, the rate rose to 32 deaths per 10,000 inmates in 2020, from 25 the year before, while New Jersey recorded 51 deaths per 10,000, up from 21. Texas, which has the largest prison population in the U.S., had 48 deaths per 10,000, up from 28, and California, with the second highest number of inmates, had 43 per 10,000 in 2020, up from 32. Current and former inmates interviewed by New York Times, as well as advocacy groups, said poor health care was a major factor in prison deaths. Also, Truth Out wrote in this regard, the rate of deaths in U.S. prisons during the first year of the COVID-19 pandemic increased dramatically as lawmakers largely ignored the effect of pandemic on imprisoned people, a grim new analysis has found. According to data from researchers at the University of California, Los Angeles, deaths in state and federal prisons rose by nearly 50% during the first year of the pandemic, despite the fact that the population of people in prisons decreased by 10%. Overall, at least 6,182 people died in prisons in 2020. This rate is more than double the increase in the rate of deaths across the U.S. overall and tops the increase in deaths at nursing homes where COVID deaths were especially high. The rate of deaths in prisons more than doubled in six states, including Alaska, Michigan, Montana, New Jersey, North Dakota, and Rhode Island. As COVID-19 first swept the U.S., the virus was ravaging prisons. While a few states implemented early release programs in response to the pandemic only to place people in other form of imprisonment, many lawmakers and officials simply ignored the